You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Still to come on the program in about an hour from now. State Representative Shane Stringer, Citronelle, will join us. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, a guy that I have gotten to know, for better or for worse, Dale Jackson, WVNN and Yellowhammer News. That's in the 11 o'clock hour, so make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, and an important piece I wanted to get him on to talk about, an op-ed for a great website I recommend, 1819 News, 1819news.com. Matt Clark joining us now. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Good morning. I'm great. It's always a pleasure to be with you. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. And, you know, this is something that hits our neck of the woods here, but it's important to talk about this. And I, you know, why did the Baldwin County school system had stuck to its guns and made it policy within the school system, forcing, I guess, these counselors to be, as you say, gender affirming? It would open up a can of worms, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think, and you know the culture down in that neck of the woods better than I do. But number one, I would still think it would be political suicide. But then in addition to that, from the legal angle, which is more where I come in, I think it would open them up to a lawsuit from at least three different constitutional angles. First, the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized that in certain matters, parents retain the rights to determine what happens to their kids, and schools have to respect that. Now, obviously, if we're going to send our kids to public schools, to a certain extent, parents give up a little bit of authority, because if the schools had to sit there and answer every single complaint or every matter that, you know, came in, they couldn't function, because you might have each set of parents that wants something absolutely different. But the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized, look, the schools get their authority from parents, all right? And so whenever they have the authority to do something, they're standing in place of the parent. But the parents don't give up all their rights when they send kids to public schools. There are certain rights that they still hang on to. And one of the biggest ones is the right to make choices like healthcare and mental treatment for their kids. So if you have a kid that comes in who says, hey, I'm noticing, you know, I'm a biological male, but I'm noticing I've got some tendencies that lines up with the females a little bit more. I don't want this. I know I'm a boy, but you know, I'm just struggling a little bit. Can you help me out? And then you have a counselor that, against, you know, the parents' wishes, comes in and starts injecting all this transgender ideology. You know, if the parents tell them to stop and the school responds with, well, once you send them to school, there are kids. No, that is not the law at all. And you could be looking at a massive lawsuit to beat the school up over that. So I think by backing down, the Baldwin County superintendent acted very wisely. And then in addition, if you've got counselors that have that have objections to participating in this, let's say that you have a counselor that is an evangelical Christian and believes that there are only two sexes, you know, Genesis 1:27, in the beginning he made the male and female, and is being pushed to do this against their wishes, the school could be open to a free speech or free exercise challenge from the counselor. So that's at least three different ways the school system could have gotten beat up in a lawsuit, and they acted very wisely by avoiding that.
Yeah, and so, and they pushed back immediately. They said, look, this just slipped in. We don't condone this at all, and we'll do a better job at making sure we vet what we put in our policy, our documents, or whatever it may be. I guess this is the question, though, and you look at it, you make three good cases there, but does there need to be something from the state, some kind of guideline, be it from the legislature or the school board on this to make it? I mean, Baldwin County is very much different than the rest of Alabama, but there are certainly places in Alabama that might say, well, screw that. We're just going to go do it our way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think having some guidance from the statewide Board of Education or something like that would be helpful, because, like, you know, at the end of the day, we want to do this the easy way. We don't want kids being subjected to this, especially against their wishes or their parents' wishes. So I will concede, you know, maybe the school board could face pressure from the other side. You know, like Joe Biden, for instance, tried to make a very big deal about saying, all right, if you receive federal funds for your schools, you have to go along with this stuff. So I think it would be helpful if the Board of Education evaluated this problem and provided some uniform guidance for each school. Now, whether they could actually make them follow that, I don't know. Sometimes you get into issues with how the state and local education authorities are divided. But yeah, if they could have somebody to tackle this problem and say, here's how you avoid the constitutional pitfalls, it keeps everybody out of trouble and everybody wins.
Yeah, and that way, like you said, at least there's some guidance there. And say you do face an outside lawsuit or something of that sort, especially in federal court, then resources from the state would kick in, right? So say, for example, the state passes a law that supports the guidance given by, whatever Baldwin County's trying to do there, and then suddenly the onus is on the state, which would maybe more equipped to handle this a legal challenge from beyond than the school system here locally.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jeff. You know, if it's in the state's hands, they're going to have greater resources and the ability to handle the suit better. And you know, sometimes I feel bad for local governments when they get sued, because this is getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but this is why sometimes groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation has had so much success when they, you know, they send a local government a threatening letter saying, you know, you can't have a nativity scene on, you know, in a public park, you know, at Christmas, and otherwise we're going to sue you. Well, the reason a lot of times they back down is these local governments look at their budget and they say, if we get sued, we don't have the money to pay, you know, maybe $100,000 to our attorneys by the time this is over. And then if we lose, we got to pay another $100,000. We simply don't have that. Let's just cave and give in. So that causes a lot of schools to, you know, to cave. But if it's in the state's hands, you're right, they'd be better equipped to handle it.
Joined by Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty here on the program. Matt, and you know, you also got to question this, like the guidance. There's no, I guess it's kind of a tricky thing, but, you know, where are we, the training and who's equipped to offer advice on these issues? I mean, it's not just necessarily LGBTQ or any of that, but let's take it, you know, into sexuality. I mean, just how much do the school system, including the guidance counselor, need to be in this realm? I know in this day and age, Matt, we expect the schools to do everything, feed our children, do more than just teach. But you wonder, you know, like where that is. I know sex ed's part of the curriculum. I get that. But some of these, like, we go beyond just the basics. Is that really the role of the schools? And is there any legal questions about that?
Yeah, I think there is. That's excellent insight, Jeff. I agree. I think a big part of the problem here is that we're not just sending our kids to school to get an education, but there's so much more that they're expected to do now, and they are filling more and more the role that parents are supposed to fill. But when it comes to the law, when you look at the constitutional right of parents to direct the upbringing of their children, that the Supreme Court has recognized, and which the Supreme Court has held that sometimes schools have to yield to. When you look closely at the analysis, here's what schools have the constitutional authority to do. They have the constitutional authority to educate, and they have, in order to accomplish that goal, they have some authority to restrain and correct the children in order to get there. So, all right, we send the kids to school to get an education, and if they start misbehaving, you can take appropriate disciplinary action. But that's it. You know, but things like you know, who am I? Why, you know, like if I'm a boy that, you know, is struggling with my gender identity or maybe even same-sex attractions or something like that, where does that fit into the education? Well, it really doesn't. At that point, that crosses the line from education into more of like kind of like a healthcare and self-identity sort of decision. And those are the kind of things that need to be left to individuals and to families. So I agree with you. I think because of that, I think legally it's best for schools to just stay out of this altogether and let the parents deal with it. But they avoid getting into lawsuits if they just say, hey, you know what, this is beyond our authority. We're just not going to go here.
Well, yeah, and it's not, you know, well, some of these people don't have, you know, a strong family structures and they can't. And they don't have the opportunity, but we got a Department of Public Health and I don't know whatever government agency, but it doesn't seem to me that, you know, just where it fits in, it doesn't really fit into the Department of Education's purview. They need to stay out of it. And
I agree.
We could talk like, well, then where, but there are probably more suitable agencies within the state government to handle these questions than schools. You know, whatever you think of them, the schools just that's just not the place to do it, right?
Yeah, I agree completely. And you bring up a good point too. It's sad that, you know, in our culture today, when we see you know, families collapsing, and so in a way, it's hard to blame schools for wanting to step in and seeing, you know, practical needs that are staring them right in the face and wanting to help. So we can give points for wanting to do a good thing, but then you also have to ask the question though of you know, when the government starts expanding and getting into areas that it has not traditionally been given the roles to do, you know, especially schools when they're going far beyond their mission, where it's not that you just have our kids during business hours so you can give them an education and you send them home, but now you're I guess to use a religious term, now you're pastoring the children, you know, all throughout life. That's something that was never meant to be given to the schools, and they should just stay out of.
Matt, let's move on to COVID, and this is something you spent a lot of time, your organization as well, on COVID policy. And guess what we're finding out? It was a surprise, ladies and gentlemen. But there was a lot of overreach by government throughout the pandemic. And now, you know, the court system, it's just the legal process takes a while. It doesn't exactly move on the head of a dime here. But we're starting to find out that, yeah, maybe some of the things the government, the state, the federal government did in the name of COVID mitigation overstepped a lot of constitutional and legal boundaries.
Amen to that. Look, you know, if we rewind to 2020, I'm not justifying what the government did, but, you know, I can be sympathetic in that, you know, we all thought that this was going to be the new Black Plague. We were being told, and everybody believed it, that our hospitals were going to be overwhelmed, and that was the big thing that we were trying to avoid, was, you know, avoiding just leaving people outside hospitals on the sidewalk as, you know, they all died. But you know, there's still two problems. Number one, the Constitution is the same both in an emergency and in times where there's not an emergency. And so I think one thing that we have to do is we have to think a little bit better up front about you know, what kind of laws we want to pass during an emergency situation that give the government the ability to manage it without running over constitutional rights. And point number two is that COVID did turn out to be less deadly than we thought. And I don't say that callously. Look, my 26-year-old brother-in-law died from this, all right? So I'm not, you know, sitting back here saying, it was all fake and you people just need to get over yourselves. No, I've seen the loss firsthand. It was horrible. But regardless, you know, human history is filled with you know, bad governments doing a lot more damage to people when they're unrestrained than public health emergencies have. So, you know, it's time now that it's 2023. It's not 2020 anymore, not 2021. We're not freaking out over the original strain or over Delta. And fortunately now COVID is just, you know, kind of a bad cold when it goes around. So it's time for the courts to take an honest look at, all right, did the government run all over the Constitution. And fortunately, the courts are holding more and more, yes, they did. And I think it's because judges are getting less afraid of COVID as time goes on. And that's a good thing, because if we let the government get away with running all over the law and the Constitution, then what we have taught the government is this: they can do whatever they want in the name of an emergency and get away with it. And while I'm not going to, you know, sit here and say like Kay Ivey and Scott Harris were literally Hitler, you know, like, you know, sending people off to concentration camps and killing them. Of course not. They're not evil people. They're not. But what happens when you have a more ambitious, less ethical executive that wants to come in the future, and he's learned, hey, all I got to do is declare an emergency, and then I can do some really nefarious things? If the courts don't step in right now and recognize that the law was broken and set a precedent that you can't do that again, there's nothing really to stop those kind of people from doing worse things in the future. And human history is just filled with the horrors of what can happen with a runaway, unchecked government. So that's why the courts need to step in and, you know, take an honest look at what happened and say, despite the fact it was an emergency, the government broke the law and it can't do that again.
Those are some extremes, but it's also things like property rights and rent controls and telling shops they got to shut down and running them out of business while they allow other, you know, the big, more corporate ones to stay open in places like Alabama, for example. But, you know, these are like questions that just didn't get dealt with at the time. And they may not be they may seem small relatively, but they're big to us, you know, people. And I think now, if ever, would be the time. Got to have some answers to this in case this does ever happen again. Just how far can our public officials, how far can they take things? And it wasn't clear in 2020, but now we have this opportunity to address it and set some kind of legal precedent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty has brought a case trying to do just that. We're representing several small business owners who were deemed non-essential and lost their businesses because of that. And, you know, I've heard some of the executive branch officials are just like, well, we were trying to manage an emergency. You know, why are you suing us? And, you know, my response is, well, they were just trying to manage an emergency, too. And you told them they couldn't go to work. What are they supposed to do when they have to, you know, pay their mortgage, when they try to put food on their table, try to pay their family's medical bills, you know, things like that. So granted, COVID was a very difficult problem to deal with, you know, for the government, but it was even harder for the people that were put out of business. So we're trying to stick up for them to make sure that something like this could never happen again.
Matt, folks want to find out more about the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, tell them how to do so.
Our website is alabamalawandliberty.org, and we are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Law and Liberty AL.
Matt, we appreciate your time this morning. I know you're very busy. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.